Hogwarts, 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 teach us something.
And welcome to Wizard Studies.
Join us as we peruse all things Potter.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Wizard Studies. I'm your host, Audrey.
And I'm Katie.
And today we're going to be discussing Luna Lovegood, everyone's favorite Ravenclaw. I don't know if she's everyone's favorite, but she's my favorite Ravenclaw.
She should be. Who else would be your favorite? Cho?
No.
Lockhart?
No. Neither.
Quirrell? Wasn't he
Ravenclaw? Yeah, none of them.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so just jumping right into the Pottermore fact file on Luna. Her birthday, we just missed it on date of recording. Today we are recording on February 15th, and Luna's birthday is February 13th. Well, fun fact is that this is the same birthday as my first dog, so I feel pretty a personal cool. connection to this day.
Was your dog's name Luna?
No, it was actually Sage. Why not? Yeah, I didn't that's name kind of her. A cool name. Yeah, she was named and born before I was, so yeah.
Okay, and so then next we would talk about her wand, but that is not a part of her Pottermore fact file, which I think is a severe overlook by J.K. Rowling. I think it would be so easy to give her a wand and put it on her fact file. It's kind of like how she doesn't give some characters birthdays, she just gives them birth years. I feel like it's not that hard to just assign somebody a arbitrary date, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we don't know Luna's wand. It would be really cool if we could break it down, but the Queen has not blessed us with that information.
Yeah, also on that note is we don't know. She had two wands, right? So the first wand that we presume she got from Ollivander when she before she started Hogwarts, and then after her stay, and we'll call it that, at Malfoy Manor with Ollivander, he does send her a new wand. So could we at least know one of those, Joe, please?
Yeah, and that's actually, I really like that moment in Deathly Hallows when Luna gets a wand from Ollivander, because I believe that Dean, we like see something from Dean or about Dean where he's like, well, why did Ollivander give me a wand? It's because Luna's better than you, Dean. That's straight up why.
Yeah, Dean's a little jealous, but we all know that she's better. All right. Luna's house is Ravenclaw. Woo! Best house ever. Wit beyond measure is man's greatest treasure.
So, and then Luna's Patronus is a hare. And we learn this in the Order of the Phoenix when she cast it during GA meetings. So I just pulled up a little fact or information about the brown hare Patronus. So I'm just going to read this for y'all. It says, the swift hare is very commonly associated with haste, fertility / rebirth, change, and life. People who partner with the hare are diligent, efficient individuals. They tend to be quite ambitious and, while sometimes impatient, manage to also often have an excellent sense of timing. People of the hare tend to have lives full of change, whether they cause it or not, and so have to learn to quickly adapt at paces that may leave the heads of others spinning. They are very sensitive to their surroundings and things happening in their lives and can be much quicker than others to act as a result. And I think that this fits Luna pretty well. I think she's a pretty adaptive person. I mean, she adapts to living, if we're going to call it that, at Malfoy Manor. She perseveres. She stays strong through it. I think it's a pretty good depiction of Luna as a character.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so Luna's parents, Xenophilius and Pandora Lovegood. And I just think these are some pretty packed names there. We learn a lot about these two characters just from their names. So Xenophilius means attracted to foreign or alien things, which straight up perfect description of Luna's dad. He's a little bit strange and definitely attracted to different things than your average wizard. And then her mom, Pandora Lovegood. We obviously do not meet her mom in the series because Pandora passed away before we meet Luna. But Pandora means all gifts, comes from Pandora's box, that story in Greek mythology. So I like to think that like maybe Pandora's gift to the world was Luna. It's kind of cool.
And then her skills listed under her Pottermore fact file are spotting Nurgles, which I think just perfectly sums up Luna. I think that there are a lot of skills that JK could have put in her Pottermore fact file, but I think spotting Nurgles just is Luna, just sums up Luna pretty well. I like it a lot.
Yeah, for sure. All right, and then her hobbies: defending her father's publication, The Quibbler, and looking for her shoes and painting. And I really like that looking for her shoes got thrown in there, because it just kind of, it's a testament to the odd little things we always see Luna doing. So I think it's pretty good sum up there.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that this fact file captures Luna and says more about her personality than I think skills and hobbies normally do about somebody. They're pretty surface level, but I think the ones that JK chose to put there, whoever wrote her fact file chose to put there, mean more and give you more of an insight on her character. So then moving on, we're going to talk about the first time Luna was mentioned in the series. So this happens in the fifth book, In Order of the Phoenix, and this is when Harry and Ginny are together on the Hogwarts Express because Ron and Hermione are both prefects, so they have to go meet with the other prefects. So this is, Harry's kind of on his own. So the quote from the book is, "What are you talking about?" said Ginny, who had squeezed past Neville to peer into the compartment behind him. "There's a room in this one. There's only Loony Lovegood in here." Neville mumbled something about not wanting to disturb anyone. "Don't be silly," said Ginny, laughing. "She's all right." She slid the door open and pulled her trunk inside. Harry and Neville followed. "Hi, Luna," said Ginny. "Is it okay if we take these seats?" The girl beside the window looked up. She had straggly, waist-length, dirty blonde hair, very pale eyebrows, and protuberant eyes that gave her a permanently surprised look. Harry knew at once why Neville had chosen to pass this compartment by. The girl gave off an aura of distinct dottiness. Perhaps it was the fact that she had stuck her wand behind her left ear for safekeeping, or that she had chosen to wear a necklace of butterbeer caps, or that she was reading a magazine upside down. Her eyes ranged over Neville and came to rest on Harry. She nodded. So I think this is a very interesting first meeting of Luna. I think something to note is the first time we ever meet her, she's referred to as Loony Lovegood, not her real name, Luna, which I think it gives the reader a very distinct impression of who this girl is, and especially when they go on to describe her. And I think J.K. Rowling does this to give her the chance to surprise us, give her the chance to grow and to grow out of this Loony Lovegood character that she originally is portrayed to us as. And I think that's a really cool, and I think it perfectly sums up Luna and kind of the surface level of who she is. And I think, I mean, first mentions are just surface levels of people, and when we really get down to know her, we learn a lot more about her and who she is and her importance. And we'll obviously talk about that later in the episode. But I like this first meeting of her. And I also want to mention that I think Ivana Lynch, especially in The Order of the Phoenix, was the perfect Luna Lovegood. And I think I say especially in The Order of the Phoenix, and maybe sometimes in The Half-Blood Prince, is that's when they give Luna, I think they write Luna better in those two movies than they do in the last book. She kind of loses her whimsy, and maybe that's with the war and they make her serious on purpose, but I just think in The Order of the Phoenix is the perfect portrayal of Luna Lovegood.
I love this first description. Like you were saying, it's totally surface level, but it still tells you so much about her, because even though there's a lot of misconceptions about Luna within, like, students at Hogwarts, she does, like, she is weird because she wears a necklace of butterbeer caps, and she reads the magazine upside down, and she's reading the Quibbler. Like, and those are the things you come to love about her. But, I mean, Harry pegs it right away. Like, we're seeing this through Harry's eyes, and the girl gave off an aura of distinct dottiness. Like, how that really, that stays with Luna, even as we learn more about her, that stays with her. And like you were saying, Ivana Lynch, like, just like physical characteristics, perfect. Like, straggly, waist length, dirty blonde hair. very pale eyebrows and protuberant eyes, like permanently surprised look. She does that so well.
Yeah, just like her face always looks like, you guys can't see this because obviously this is a podcast, but they're always just so big, and she just blinks like she's always so curious and wants to know what's happening. And I just love that about her.
Yeah, me too.
And I also think when you mentioned the stuff about the Butterbeer caps and how she's reading the magazine upside down, it's really cool because the more we get to know Luna, the more these things make sense. I mean, to as much extent that they can make sense. She always has a reason for what she's doing. Like, the magazine is upside down because there's print in it that you're supposed to read upside down. I just love that she's not just whimsy for the sake of whimsy. That's like who she really is as a person.
She's not putting on a show.
No, that's Luna, and you gotta love her.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so moving on to her Myers-Briggs personality type, INFP. This is from Simbaga on Tumblr. So quick little jump over to the 16 personalities website. And this INFP is described as the mediator. So I'll just go on to read some of these. I kind of went a little crazy reading the description of this because I felt like a lot of it made sense. And again, I was just getting really into Luna when I was writing these notes. So INFP personalities are true idealists, always looking for the hint of good in even the worst of people and events, searching for ways to make things better. They comprise just 4% of the population, and the risk of feeling misunderstood is unfortunately high for the INFP personality type. So all of this, totally Luna. She's always misunderstood. Like you said, loony love good. No one, at least I think very few people at Hogwarts, maybe with the exception of Harry and sometimes Ginny, really see her for being more of a real person that isn't just this kind of weird girl that everyone kind of laughs off. And of course, she always finds the good in things. At the end of Order of the Phoenix, she's just looking for her stuff during the feast. I mean, she's not complaining that people have hid her stuff. She just says, and this is a quote from the end of Order of the Phoenix, she says, "They'll come back, they always do in the end. It was just that I wanted to pack tonight." So she just finds the good. She's like, yeah, people have fun hiding my stuff. I'm not going to get too upset about it. I just want to pack up my stuff so I can get on the Hogwarts Express tomorrow.
Yeah, I just think that Luna has one of the best hearts in the entire series. I think that she does have a little bit of a Hufflepuff in her. I think she does. She genuinely cares about people, and she cares about people, but then she doesn't care what other people think about her, which I think is just such an admirable trait in people, because I don't think I have that all the time. And she's got such a good heart and is so caring and never sees the bad in people or sees the bad in things. She always sees the good, which again, I think is really admirable.
And we will definitely get to talking about that later. All right, so moving on, 16 personalities also says, when deciding how to move forward, INFPs will look to honor, beauty, morality, and virtue. This sums up Luna pretty well. She's always making the honorable choice. You know, she supports Harry when 90% of Hogwarts does not, 90% of the wizarding world does not. We originally think that maybe this kind of comes from her father, like her father decides to print in the Quibbler supporting Harry. But then we see that he doesn't always, make the right choice. He does call the Death Eaters, which that's a difficult choice that I don't even know that we can break down. Like, he was desperate to get Luna back, but it's something that sets Luna apart, I think, from a lot of people in the series, that she's almost always making the right choice, ethically and morally.
I think there's a quote, oh gosh, I can't remember whether it's Hagrid or Dumbledore, but I think it's one of them where they talk about the right choice isn't always the easy choice. Like, it's time to make the hard choices. And I think that Luna always does that from the beginning of the series to the end. She always makes the right choice that she truly believes is the right choice and doesn't ever compromise her beliefs because they're making the choice would be hard.
Yeah, for sure. So then also INFPs are known to be able to communicate deeply with others, easily speaking in metaphors and parables. So, I mean, Luna is always kind of, she speaks a little weirdly, you know, she's always referencing like different magical creatures and assuming that everyone's getting what she's saying. But the communicating deeply with others, we see this a lot with Harry. She understands Harry in times when Ron and Hermione just can't because they haven't had the same experiences. So Luna has dealt with loss. She's lost a parent. And that's something where she can relate to Harry and understand his grief. They both see the Thestrals. She says, "Don't worry, you're just as sane as I am," which originally throws Harry off. But I think she is able to comfort him when he's freaking out in that moment. And Ron is like, "What are you talking about, Harry? They're pulled by invisible horses just like they always have been." And then we find, it says, INFPs often drift into deep thought, enjoying contemplating the hypothetical and the philosophical more than any other personality type. Left unchecked, INFPs may start to lose touch, withdrawing into hermit mode, and it can take a great deal of energy from their friends or partner to bring them back to the real world. Luckily, like flowers in the spring, INFPs' affection, creativity, altruism, and idealism will always come back. They have a worldview that inspires compassion, kindness, and beauty wherever they go. All right, so right from the start of that little paragraph, deep in thought, everyone's calling her loony. She's totally off in her world, contemplating the big things all the time. And she does have this, like, hermit mode quality, I think, because she is a bit of a lone wolf in that she doesn't have a lot of close friends at Hogwarts. It's almost like Ginny and Harry are her two closest friends, but they wouldn't really think of Harry. They wouldn't think of her as their closest friends, which is a little sad, mm-hmm. but I think she's okay with being alone like that. And then I love how it brings up kindness, because like you were saying, one of Luna's biggest traits is her kindness, and this can get overlooked maybe because it's not like her house trait. But there's actually an article on Pottermore called The Kindness of Luna Lovegood. And it goes through a lot of scenarios where Luna was just, like, just totally kind when she didn't have to be. So the first one is how on the Hogwarts Express, she gets laughed at by Ginny and Hermione, makes fun of her dad's magazine, and then Luna makes sure to carry Ron's owl off the train. And doesn't even get thanked for it. She reassured Harry with the Thestrals, like I was saying. She's always telling Harry, always saying that she believes in him. She walks straight up to him in front of everyone in Order of the Phoenix when no one believes that Voldemort's back. And she says, "I believe he who must not be named is back. I believe you fought him and escaped from him." Going forward more, she knows Ron's nervous about playing in the Quidditch match for Gryffindor, and Luna wishes him luck, and then she supports Gryffindor with her infamous lion hat, which is kind of cool because you never really see people going cross houses, and she does that. There's a lot on this article. It's a really good one, but it's all things like that where she just small little acts of friendship that she does that I really like about her, and I think it gets overlooked a lot. Then some of the strengths of the INFP personality type. They are idealistic, seek and value harmony, open-minded and flexible, very creative, passionate and energetic, dedicated and hardworking. All of those, I think match up. Especially the open-minded and creative, passionate and energetic. And then I really like the hardworking one because I think that isn't a part of Luna that we see a lot, but she totally dedicates herself to the DA, and we don't really talk about how important that is to her. So then some weaknesses for her, or for the INFP personality, is that it's too idealistic, too altruistic, impractical, take things too personally, and difficult to get to know. I definitely disagree with the taking things too personally, because I feel like Luna, more than any of these other teenagers, can just let things roll off her shoulders. People tease her all the time, and she doesn't even let it stop her at all. The difficult to get to know thing could be seen as a weakness with Luna for a lot of characters. A lot of characters just know her surface level, like Ron and Hermione. They I think, just always see her as Loony Lovegood. But then I think she does, I think Harry does get to know her pretty well, especially after Sirius dies, and they have this more of a connection, I think.
Yeah, and I think Impractical is one that I kind of chuckled at when you read that, because, I mean, Luna isn't always the most practical of people, but I think that's one of her redeeming qualities, something that makes her who she is. She doesn't always, like, I think this goes back to what I was saying earlier about, she doesn't always choose the easiest choice. She's not always practical about it. She chooses what's right and what she believes is right, whether it's practical or impractical. She's strong. She's very passionate about her beliefs and very strong in her beliefs. And no matter if people think that they're crazy or impractical, she's not going to change. And so the next thing we're going to talk about is specifically Luna's relationship with Harry, because I think it's a very interesting relationship that those two characters have, and in some ways a little bit of an unlikely relationship. So if you go on Pottermore, there's a section that's all about Luna Lovegood, and it's basically just this huge infographic that kind of shows the stats on Luna in the book and kind of her most important moments. And the infographics are a little bit different for everybody. But in Luna's, they have a section that shows the top 10 people in groups that Luna speaks to, ranked by number of words spoken. And so for this, Harry is the number one person that she speaks to. And I understand that that's probably a little bit lopsided because the books are about Harry, so we're with Harry most of the time. But so she speaks 1,273 words with Harry, where the person in second place, or group in second place, is Ron, who she only speaks 263 words to. So there's a huge difference, like basically 1,010 words difference between the first and second place person that Luna speaks to the most.
I think this graphic is super interesting too, because Bill Weasley, she speaks 56 words to him. Obviously, I think all of them are at Shell Cottage. But Neville, she only speaks 46 words to. And I feel like we always associate Luna and Neville because they're like, they, in the group of the six, like the trio plus Ginny, Neville, and Luna, Ginny fits in with the trio more. She spends more time with just the trio. And then we're always kind of like, oh yeah, and then Neville and Luna are there. But she only speaks 46 words to him.
I think a part of that is also how the movies tried to force them together. God, I hated that in Deathly Hallows when Neville's like, do you guys know where Luna is? I have something I have to tell her. It's like, no, don't tell her that, please.
I just think it's funny. I mean, I don't really think it's believable. And Neville should most certainly end up with Hannah. But I think it's kind of comical the way they do it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's just, oh, we have these two characters that don't have a love interest and kind of can be together. Let's push them together.
Right. We have a group of six. Anyways. And the two couples now, so what's the last two people?
And so then going back to Harry's relationship with Luna, I think that Harry always listens to what she's saying, and he never outright dismisses her ideas and her beliefs, where Ron and Hermione can be like, well, the Crumplehorn Snark Act isn't real, Luna, don't you know that? And Harry just kind of sits back and listens and accepts. Maybe he doesn't accept it, but he doesn't challenge her on her beliefs. He listens and never dismisses, which I think is really important, and I think it shows how much Harry likes Luna because he doesn't dismiss her ideas, which are a big part of who she is. And then also, I think that Harry really does care about Luna, and I think their friendship is a really cool one. And I think two instances where their relationship comes to the forefront is obviously in The Half-Blood Prince, when Harry takes her to Slughorn's party. And I think that's a really, I mean, obviously Luna probably wasn't his first choice. It was probably Ginny, but he still took her and said that he wanted to go as friends because he really likes her and thinks that he can have a fun time with her. I think in the movies he goes, someone's cool, like someone like Luna. And just somebody who he can sit back and not have to worry about impressing, someone he can be himself with, somebody who he's comfortable around. And then the second instance where we see their relationship really come to life is in the Deathly Hallows, when Harry and the trio are at her house, and he goes up to her room and sees the murals of the friends of, like, the GA members, basically those six people that we were talking about earlier, and this gold chain written just friends, friends, friends over and over again. And there's a quote from that part. Harry felt a great rush of affection for Luna.
Yeah, I mean, that part in the books. I was rereading Deathly Hallows recently, and when I came to it, I was so, like, overcome. I thought I was going to cry because it gets left out of the movies, which we're going to get to, but you kind of forget it happens. And then along the notes of what you were saying about Harry bringing Luna to Slughorn's party, and, like, he just feels that he can be himself around her, and I think there's very few people that kind of understand the burden on Harry, especially during Half-Blood Prince, like Order of the Phoenix, Half-Blood Prince. I think a lot of people don't realize how affected he is by this whole The Chosen One and the return of Voldemort and having to run DA. But Luna seems to get that, and I think Harry doesn't have to pretend that he doesn't have to be super courageous around her. He can admit that he's not totally dealing with it perfectly. It's not easy.
Yeah, in my sociology class, we're talking a lot about faces and kind of the faces we present to the world. And I think that Harry can present a very raw face to Luna, a very much relaxed face. He doesn't have to put on a show in front of her. He can just be himself. Going back, talking more about their relationship, I think that you talked about this earlier, but their relationship was really strengthened, I think, when Luna convinced her father to interview Harry and to get it printed in the Quibbler, where Harry could just finally speak his piece to the wizarding world and finally tell them everything and finally kind of get this thing off of his chest where he's always kind of exploding with bursts of, like, no, I fought them, and no, it's real, I promise, I promise. He's able to just lay it all out there and kind of get this pressure and this burden off of his chest, and this ends up being immensely important, not only to Harry, but to everybody else, because people start to believe him after this interview is printed, and it starts to become a huge rallying point for people who are kind of maybe, like, on the fence, but were swayed to, because they didn't want to believe that Voldemort came back. It gave them the motivation or the spark or, like, the flame that they were able to finally come to terms with it and move on and start to take action against it. And I think that's really important to this series, and especially to Harry himself, where he doesn't feel so much alone anymore after people start to believe him because of this interview. And then you've kind of talked about this earlier, how Luna really understands the burden, a lot of the burdens that Harry feels. And one of these especially is having his parents dead and understanding death and how to grieve and how to move on from death and live your life. And Luna can relate to him because when she was 10 when her mother died, and she obviously, because she can see Thestrals, saw this happen. And I think they mentioned that it's because her mother loved to experiment with spells and something went horribly wrong one day. And she's very frank when talking about death. And I think that's very important for Harry because he's never had anybody kind of be frank with him about death and tell him the real facts and the real way to move on and to grieve. They kind of always just dance around it. And Luna doesn't dance around it. She tells him how it is. And she helps him move on and is able to be this real person and somebody who he can connect with over this fact.
Moving on to the book-to-movie comparison for Luna, I think we hit on most of these while we were talking about just Luna in general. But, yeah, in the movies, she's pretty much reduced to that Loony Love Good aspect. We don't get any of the complexities of her character. I think a lot of crucial things are taken out, where you just get little things about her. Books, in comparison, we learn a lot about her relationships with people and just how good she is, how kind, how altruistic, how good she is. Like you were saying, understanding loss with Harry and the Thestrals and everything, that doesn't do it justice in the movie, I think. And then the biggest thing for me is the painting on her bedroom wall that Harry finds in Deathly Hallows, because in the movies, I think if they had added that to the movies, it wouldn't have really made sense, because we don't get friendship as much. you don't really understand what the group of the six of them means to Luna in the movies. So if they had thrown that into the movies, it would have been like a little weird. But in the books, you still feel it and it makes sense, even if it may be a little lopsided because maybe Harry wouldn't have thought that Luna would have painted this thing. But then when he sees it, he still feels this affection for her.
Yeah, and I think another thing that wasn't shown in the movies is during the Half-Blood Prince, towards the beginning, I think there's a scene where Luna comes up to Harry and goes, "Are we having DA meetings again this year?" And Harry's like, "No, there's no reason to. Umbridge is gone. We have a real Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. We don't need that anymore." And Luna says something along the lines of, "Oh, darn it. It was the only time I felt like I really had friends," or something. And that just, like, hits you right in the heart. Ugh. Like, with her, again, with her mural also just hitting you right in the heart for how much these people mean to Luna. And I think you mentioned this earlier, but these people mean so much more to Luna than Luna means to these people. Yeah. And Luna doesn't care about that. She still loves them unconditionally, no matter how little or how much they love her in return. And I think that's, again, really admirable. Okay, so moving on to the "Where are we now?" section. Where are they now? Section. Luna became a famous naturalist, discovering many new species of magical creatures. Which, again, what else would Luna be doing? Of course, this is what she's doing. It does mention in the lexicon, though, that she never did find a Crumplehorn Snorkak, which is such a bummer. That would have just tied everything up really nicely.
It's a point for Hermione on that one.
And then she ends up marrying the grandson of Newt Scamander, which we are getting, and Tina Goldstein. Spoiler alert, if you didn't know that, they do end up together. They do. Sorry, guys. Should have mentioned that before. But who we're learning a lot more about in the Fantastic Beasts movies. So their grandson is Rolf Scamander, and she ends up having twin boys with him, Lorcan and Lysander, which are just such Luna names. I love it.
Yeah, I know we were talking about names in the last episode with Ron and Hermione's choices of Rose and Hugo, which I just realized R and H. Ron.
Uh-huh. What? That's how I don't know how I didn't thought of that before.
Yeah, I don't know how I didn't realize that. It was like when I was saying it all. But Luna names her twin boys both L names. Man, this is a lot of alliteration. But these names, like, I can't even criticize these names because they're just so Luna. Like, yeah. We can make fun of Harry's name, Harry and Ginny's name to their kids because it's named after everyone they know and all that. But, like, there's any other name for Luna's kids would not make sense.
Yeah, and I can't believe I didn't mention this earlier in this section about Harry and Luna's relationship, but they end up, his only daughter's middle name is Luna. And I do think that that's mostly because of Harry. Yes, it can have a little bit of Ginny's relationship with Luna, but I can't believe I didn't mention that earlier. Dropping the ball.
I feel like I didn't know that.
Yeah, her name is Lily Luna.
It's a lot of L's.
Yeah, Lily Luna
Potter.
Potter. I almost said Weasley.
I know, but they don't hyphenate.
Yeah, it's true. Okay, so then moving on to our last section, our pop quiz. Ding, 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 pop quiz. today, our question is, what is your favorite magical creature?
I am going to go right with the Luna theme on this one. I think that my favorite magical creature is the Thestral. I mean, it's a really sad magical creature because you only see it if you've, like, gone through this full death, experiencing, seeing, grieving death. But it's such a cool creature. I mean, I feel like they're so mysterious. They're so interesting. I think I would love to learn more about them and, like, see them come up maybe in Fantastic Beasts or something. You know, I love, like, the Nifflers and all those cute little creatures, but the Thestral's pretty cool.
Okay, side note, did you know that a Thestral could be your Patronus?
Yeah, I want
that's a Thestral. Such a badass Patronus. There's a YouTube channel that I watch, Super Carlin Bros, shout out. listen to us and promote us as well. But they do really good Harry Potter videos, a lot of Harry Potter theory videos, and they do the quizzes on Pottermore. It's really fun. You can, like, play along with them. But one of their Patronuses is a Thestral, I'm pretty sure.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
All right, so whatever. What's your favorite magical creature?
Okay, I think I'm going to have to go with Pygmy Pups. They're just so cute. Also, I love Ginny, and she gets one. I own a Pygmy Puff. I own a pink Pygmy Puff. I bought it from the Wizarding World in Orlando. Also, my favorite animals are hedgehogs, and they're pretty similar, so I don't know which came first, but I don't know if I like Pygmy Pups, and that's why I like hedgehogs, or I liked hedgehogs, and that's why I like Pygmy Pups. But they're so cute.
What is your Pygmy Puff's name?
Cotton Candy.
Yep. I just wanted that to be announced to the listeners. It's a really creative one.
Thank you. Thank you. Also, when I went to the premiere of, I think it was either part one or part two, I can't remember, of Deathly Hallows, I brought my Pygmy Pup with me. And I could hear either the people in front of me or behind me. I think they saw my Pygmy Puff, and they were like, oh, Ginny has one of those. What's that? What's the name of Ginny's Pygmy Puff? And they were like, they couldn't think of it. And I was just sitting there. I was like, it's Arnold. It's Arnold. It's Arnold. But I didn't want to be one of those people that, like, corrects people in public. But, yeah, fun fact.
All right. So just a few announcements. We are going to be releasing our episodes every other Tuesday. So this was our second episode, but the first one that came out on the Tuesday. So the next one is going to be released March 19th. So head on over to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us, so you can download them right away, and listen.
Yes. And then you can also give us a follow on our social media. So we are on Facebook and Instagram, both places as Wizard Studies Podcast.
All right, as always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, just do your best, we'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.